Right. So our speaker, Elise, will share her own recovery journey, and then she will guide us through a study of step two. She will be referring to our big book, Eating Disorders Anonymous. Visual aid. She will provide page references as indicated. There will be time for questions and member sharing after Elise finishes. Some members find that the book is much easier to follow if using a paper version of the book. If you only have the book on an electronic device, you may prefer to listen. Elise, it's all yours.
Oh gosh. Okay, I'm pretty nervous. So I guess here goes. So the instructions were to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I realized that my recovery is not that straightforward and pretty convoluted and wonky. So, and also my spiritual journey with step two is quite convoluted. So I'm going to try to, just hang in there with me. It's not a straight line. But I guess my main take home message from, if you don't take anything else from my story or the step study, is just that in my personal experience, working the steps in this program specifically and working step two has brought me to, they say like in other 12-step programs, like spiritual fitness has helped me feel, strengthen my like spirituality and my dedication to my values, and brought me a sense of spiritual connectedness that I've never experience before. So aside from everything else, like that's the most important take home message, is that this program really works. This step really works. I've had struggles with eating disorder behaviors, since before I even knew I did. My mom has told me that I started body checking and, having issues with body image when I was probably kindergarten. And I don't remember that. I know that I don't understand exactly where that came from, but now as an adult, I know that my grandma had an eating disorder. And so my mom sort of grew up in an environment where certain types of bodies and certain things were like not acceptable, and got a lot of messages about certain body types not being acceptable and some being preferred over others. And so growing up in our household, I never got a direct negative comment about my body, but I grew up in an atmosphere where making negative comments about other people's bodies, or my mom about her own body and her, I'm sorry, the phone's ringing in the background. I didn't realize that context was so unhealthy until I was an adult looking back. So I also was a very anxious kid. I had really bad social anxiety and I had a hard time making friends, and I got bullied because I cried really easily. And at some point, around third or fourth grade, fifth grade, I realized I made the connection that it must be because I'm too fat. And if only I lose weight, I will be confident. I will excel at sports. My life will be wonderful. And all these things will happen to me if only I lose weight. So at that point in my life, like around 11, I think I started dedicating myself to losing weight and changing my body and all that. So I hid my eating disorder for quite some time, probably like almost 2 years, before my parents kind of figured out what was happening. And for about a week after they started, figured out what was happening and sent me to a therapist, I, tried really hard to not engage in any behaviors. And then I realized that they found out and they couldn't do anything to stop me. And I felt so powerful and so, just a sense of like, I have control over my body and you can't stop me. And everything went really accelerated and downhill from there. I'm not going to go through all the details of all like the horror stories of all the stuff that, my eating disorder brought me to. I will, say that, I've been through all the different, periods of extreme restriction, periods of over-exercising, periods where, you're expected to eat dinner with your family and you go and you look in the refrigerator and you just cry because you can't eat anything and you're expected to be eating with the family. There have been times where, there was a time where I lost my job because I skipped work, when I was in the middle of like a binge and purge episode. I had my parents have to take over my bank account at one point in college because I was spending like hundreds of dollars a day on binging for binging and purge episodes. I've done, you know, inpatient, outpatient, partial, day treatment, hospitalization, like all that stuff. The first time I went to residential treatment was when I was first introduced to the 12 steps. We had to go to like 3 meetings, 12-step meetings a week. And there was only one food-based meeting in the community, so we had to go to AA and NA. And I honestly did not like the food-based meeting because I didn't want to associate with certain types of food behaviors, and I didn't like just talking about food all the time. And I was 15 and was very like, whatever, like I'll just take a nap in the back of the room at the AA meeting. I didn't really understand. And in my family growing up, when my parents found out I had an eating disorder, the way that my mom thought was best to motivate me for recovery was very, like threaten me, swear at me, you know, very, very like negative motivation. And I shared for the first time at an AA meeting, and I told the community, I told the group that I wasn't sure I wanted recovery and that I wasn't ready to give this eating disorder up yet. And I was really in a place of like questioning and didn't know what to do. And I was open and honest. And if I would have shared that at home, I would have gotten a tirade. And I shared it in the AA meeting. And afterwards, everyone came and gave me hugs and was so welcoming and so accepting. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is a safe place. And I didn't go back to a 12-step program for another almost 10 years, not quite 7 years after that. But when I finally did, so when I graduated from college, I had been through, you know, treatment programs, all sorts of, you know, chaotic stuff. Oh, another moment of powerlessness I had that I feel like I want to share, partly for my own validation, because I forget, it's really easy for me to remember my powerlessness over binging and purging. But restricting is so sneaky, and part of my difficulty with recovery is, and I heard someone share this last week too, so it felt very validating that like, there's this part of me that's like, our society glorifies restricting. It glorifies over-exercising. And so I tend to think that like, oh, like that's not a big deal. But there was a point in my, that I knew I was powerless over it when I was 17 and I had stopped purging, I had stopped binging, but I was technically following like the meal plan, like doing what I was supposed to do. And at that point in my recovery, I didn't have a spiritual connection really. I mean, it kind of did, but not really. And I was just like, recovery is what good girls do. You tell me to eat on my meal plan, I'll do that. You tell me not to only exercise this much, I'll do that. Like it was very much like, these are the rules and you follow them. And I thought I was following the rules and I thought I was doing what was expected of me. And I was like, still at a very unhealthy weight and blood sugar level and dehydrated and all that. And I didn't know it. And when I was growing up, sports were the most important thing to me. I was a gymnast, and there was a point where I did my sports physical, and they didn't pass me. And they said, you can't play sports unless you gain X amount of weight. And they wouldn't even tell me what the number was because they didn't want me to know where I was and on the scale. And my parents sat me at home. They sat me down at home and they gave me this news and I lost it. It felt like someone had punched me in the stomach. Like, and I get this, we're not doing step one, but this is just like, I want to share part of this is like a major step one moment where I knew that for something bigger than me, something important to me, like was being taken away from me. And I really felt like they were asking too much of me. I was like, I can't do more than what I'm doing. I can't eat more than what I'm eating. I can't exercise less than what I'm doing. I just can't. It just seemed impossible to me. So I guess the only reason I share that is because I know I tend to like minimize that part of my disease. So when I graduated from college, I kind of like really dedicated myself to my recovery because I was going into a career where I knew that it would be impossible for me to carry on with my eating disorder and have a successful career. I did not want to go back to any treatment center because I was on my parents' insurance and I didn't want them to know that I was struggling. And so I started, I decided to go back to a 12-step program, like a different 12 food-based 12-step program, because I didn't know about EDA. And I started working the steps in that program. I had a sponsor. And honestly, it was very, very helpful to me. I had some pretty solid recovery for about 6 years. And part of it was because that group that I had, the culture of the group I was in, was very similar to EDA. Like no one, we had like a guideline that we didn't talk about meal plans in the group. We didn't talk about numbers. We had very similar guidelines. And my sponsor was very much like, do what your dietitian says. I'll lead you through the steps. So I found a lot of freedom working the steps in that program. However, if I look back, I tend to glorify that part of my recovery. And if I'm honest with myself, if I look back, I was free of a lot of eating disorder symptoms, but I was still very codependent and had a lot of unhealthy behaviors with men and dating. And I eventually married someone essentially because everyone else that I knew was married by 25 and it seemed like a good idea at the time. So I wasn't really spiritually healthy, even though I wasn't in my eating disorder. So then I moved to still like really solid recovery. I think part of in eating disorder recovery, I think part of it is I worked at, a community mental health center in an addiction unit. And there were so many people there that were also in 12-step recovery that like part of my working community was like, everyone was dedicated to recovery. So it was just this great atmosphere. So then I went back to school and I moved across the country sort of, and, the 12-step group down there was a lot more rigid, and, I got divorced and this like series of stressors came together and I relapsed after, 6 years of very solid, almost symptom-free recovery. And I felt so ashamed, because I really thought like, wow, I've been in this, at that point I had been in this 12-step program for, 6 or 7 years and I'd worked the steps several times and was like, what's wrong? Like, why am I relapsing now? Like if my recovery were stronger, it wouldn't matter if I got divorced or not. It wouldn't matter that all these stressors are happening. Like I should be able to like suck it the hell up and, not fall back into this. And of course, because I was in this like sort of more rigid program at the time, I was like, it must be because I'm eating the wrong things. Like, very eating disordered brain. It must be because I'm not counting or I'm not measuring, I'm eating the bad foods. And so I got sucked back into some of that and just really like had a really messy, like, free from some behaviors and then not. And then this horrible, messy, not totally back in my eating disorder. Like I wasn't, purging 5 times a day, like back in the past, or like I had more than 4 safe foods. It wasn't that bad because I still had a semblance of dedication to my recovery through a 12-step program. I just was so confused about how to use the 12-step program with, because so much of this program I was in, people were focusing on the food and talked about the food all the time. I had a sponsor who was like telling me, shaming me essentially for eating certain things. And I just was like, I'm done with that. And I don't know how, like some miracle, I stumbled across EDA on the internet and I read the website and I was like, oh my gosh, like this is what I need. This is what I've been looking for. Because despite all the, symptom-free years that I had, there was still a part of me that was very rigid and perfectionistic about how I ate or when I ate, or still some obsessive, like counting, like not counting calories, but counting certain things. And, I never let go of that. I never truly surrendered that part of my life. So I went to my first EDA meeting and immediately was like, how do I work this program? How do I find a sponsor? And just like threw myself into it. And I lived in a town that did not have any face-to-face meetings. And for a while there, I was going to like essentially all the EDA phone meetings. Cause I was in school, so I had a very flexible schedule and could do that. And back then there were no, face-to-face meetings there were very few sponsors. And someone asked me to be their step buddy and we were working the steps together. And I would not advise that. I got a lot out of it, like in terms of spiritual growth and at least learning the steps and learning the EDA kind of version of the steps. but it's really hard to hold each other accountable when you're both working the steps together for the first time. It's really good to have someone who's worked them before in this program. I guess like that kind of brings me here to where I am today. All this stuff happened. I'll get more into my like spiritual recovery when we go through step two and kind of give examples for my own life. But now I moved across the country again. My behaviors and my symptoms, I am honestly like ashamed to say, like I'm not symptom free. I'm not behavior free. I tend to get caught up in that. I tend to get beat myself up about, you know, even though I'm not using behaviors like every day or even every week or whatever, I get stuck in the, you don't have perfect abstinence. But the growth I've seen in my life, like I said, is like a huge dedication to my higher power or higher purpose that I really do feel like I can turn to and rely on every day, not just for eating disorder related things, but for my life in general, decisions I make in my relationships, the decisions I make in my career, the decisions I make every day, you know, driving to work, like just, I really feel like that spiritual connectedness is like interwoven in my life now. And there are areas of my recovery that I've seen growth in that, I wasn't expecting to, like the obsession, the rigidity of like counting and, the relying on numbers to tell me what to eat rather than my body. Like I'm really learning to listen to my body and it's really, really scary. But I'm really glad that EDA focuses on that because I would not be able to do that on my own. I need that outside encouragement. The other thing I feel like EDA has really done for me is this approach of like when we share milestones and we focus on the things we're doing right, my brain works the exact opposite. And so this program has really helped me learn like self-forgiveness and grace. And like when I make a quote, like mistake or my recovery isn't perfect, to acknowledge the good things that I'm doing and to build upon them. And then it just helps when people in program will say things like, oh, I ate a food I previously restricted, and people applaud them for it. And I'm like, because my eating disorder is beating the heck out of me for doing stuff like that. So just to hear that, like, wow, that's a good thing. Like recovery behaviors are a good thing. And we can celebrate those when the rest of the outside world and our eating disorders are not. So that's like essentially my story. I can talk a little bit about what my recovery looks like today, and then we can get into step two. So I start every day with prayer and meditation. Sometimes I do before I go to bed too, but not as consistently. I tend to say the third step prayer throughout the day a lot, like the original AA one, because I don't remember my third step statement that my sponsor had me write. Like I don't have that committed to memory. That helps me stay out of my head and out of my like self-focus. I go to probably two meetings a week, like one face-to-face meeting, one phone meeting, minimum, sometimes more. I work the steps with a sponsor. I highly, highly recommend that. I know it's hard to find a sponsor, but it's really worth the effort to go to as many different meetings as you can and listen and try to find people that are sponsoring. I guess those are kind of like the nuts and bolts of my recovery. I do work with a therapist and a dietitian, and it's a dietitian whose like ideas really mesh well with EDA. Like it's very consistent and very helpful. I don't know. I guess I'll open up for questions later about more about that, but we can get into step two. So step two starts on page 117. And step two, just to review, is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And in the beginning, it talks about how everyone comes to program with a kind of a different idea of what God is or what their higher power is, and how that, you know, even if you have a strong faith, that you might still be struggling with recovery. So that part really stood out to me. This it's the first paragraph after it says step two, the part I have highlighted on page 117, the part I have highlighted says, others of us had always believed in God, yet we couldn't figure out how to allow God into our lives to a greater degree, especially when we knew that meant we would have to lay aside our eating disorders. So that's the part I related to the most. I grew up in a very like religious family. I'm very grateful for how I grew up. I had a great church community, very loving and supportive. And but that was my issue, was that I had this faith and I did not apply it at all to my eating disorder recovery. And you know, it says came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. But there's a lot of times where I don't want to be restored to sanity. And I think like the insanity part is like good for me. And, you know, so I, at that point, before I came to program, I don't think I ever let my higher power into that part of my life. Because like it says, it knew we meant we have to lay aside our eating disorders. So I could trust God to help me with school, or trust God to help me with maybe some family things, or, you know, things like that. But I never would have trusted God to like, have created my body to manage itself without me having to control it. I never would have trusted that, God had created my body to give me hunger signals to listen to, or trust that if I eat something different, that my body would be okay. I would never trust God in that way. So my concept of a higher power has changed a lot. Especially like when I relapsed, it was like in the midst of, this second paragraph where it talks about like people who are atheists or agnostics struggling to find a concept of a power that works. So, there became a point in my life where in my church, you know, we stand up and we say like the Apostles' Creed and say what you believe. And I was like, I don't really believe a lot of that stuff. Like I don't, you know, as this sentence says in the second paragraph, we struggle to find a conception of a higher power that we could reconcile with our ideas about how the world works. So I have a pretty scientific mind, and there was a lot of things about religion that I just couldn't stand up and say that I believed in, and I felt pretty like hypocritical doing that. And it made me worry, because if my recovery had been built on this idea of a higher power, like what was going to happen with my recovery, which again is why I appreciate EDA so much, because it's so flexible. It's so, so flexible about what your higher power or higher purpose is. The path is wide. I think they say that in AA too, but like the path is very, very wide. The path to recovery accepts all ideas of what your higher power, higher purpose is. So as we move forward to the, what paragraph is this? So page 118, it's the like second full paragraph. So the thing too about like, even if you're the type of person like me that believes in science and you want all the answers, you want to know how this is going to work. Our big book also says that like, you don't have to understand it. There's always going to be an element of faith. So there's not going to be any formula, which this is where I get stuck. Like, you know, X amount of big book readings plus 3 meetings a week plus praying this many times a day equals perfect recovery. There's an element of faith. There's a factor in there that, as a human being, I assume the answers are out there. I'm a human being and I will never know them. And, I need to remember that when it comes to step 2, that a power greater than myself also means it knows more than I know. And, that's kind of where that comes from. So that's like the difficult part for me, is this opening yourself up to something that you can trust. I might skip ahead a little bit and come back. So let me just be patient with me for a second. Okay. So there is a part of step 2. It's near like page. Okay. So I'm going to skip ahead to page 120 for a second. So page 120. We go down to the third bullet point. I think this is really important in step 2. When you're working the steps, and you'll go through a lot of exercises where like you write a wanted ad for your higher power and that kind of thing. And what really helped me was this third bullet point about, we found we cannot rely on anything that we were not willing to trust, and that the result was nil until we had let go absolutely. So for me, because I was going through this sort of crisis of faith with organized religion, I felt really kind of guilty about that. I felt kind of like I should be able to like just trust, you know, Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, the way that I was raised and the way many people believe. And I was really scared that if I didn't do that, then I wouldn't find recovery. And this bullet point really helped me, like, if that's not something I can fully trust and believe in, if I'm not radically honest with myself, then that can't be my higher power. It has to be something that you can trust. And so this sort of gave me permission to get out of my like little box idea of what a higher power and a higher purpose could be. And I'll try to explain what my higher purpose is. It's really, again, like I said, it's kind of wonky and convoluted. I don't have a very good straightforward idea of what it is, but I'll try to explain it at some point. So I just think that that's a really important point about step two, is like really be open and honest about, like, don't try to make yourself believe anything that you don't truly believe in your heart, because it won't be very effective. Okay, so now I'm going to jump back to, let's see, page 119. And it starts, I'm just going to read this huge section. Whatever conception we choose, we will need to draw upon it as we move forward with the next steps. In step three, we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. To do so, we must find a concept we trust to bring perspective into our lives. On step seven, we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. We will need a power or purpose that helps us move past current limitations so we can make good use of our time, energy, skills, and talents. In step 11, through prayer and meditation, we seek knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. In this step, as in all the rest, we need a connection to a power or a purpose that provides us with the strength and perspective to keep calm and focus on what really matters. And then the next, before I go back to why I highlighted that part, in the next paragraph, after the first italics parts, it says, the situation is the same for everyone. We commit our lives to God as we understand God, and then live out that commitment on a day-to-day basis. So I guess why I think this part is important is that once you have a foundation, once you've worked this step, and you kind of have an idea of what your higher power, higher purpose is, you really can, if it's something that you fully, truly are committed to and believe in, you can draw upon it throughout the day. And set aside, my favorite part about the readings in the big book is it talks about setting aside the daily drama, setting aside all the stuff when you're caught up in yourself to help you get through the day. And I will kind of give an example of what that looks like in my life. So right now I started a new job about 6 weeks ago. I also moved, so I'm from North Dakota originally. Now I'm living in the Boston area. It's a crazy, like, different culture shock, and I'm very, very homesick. And I'm starting this new job where I feel very, like, less than and pretty intimidated. And there's a lot of times throughout the day where I'm driving to work through Boston traffic, and I'm crying and like homesick and like, I don't want to go to work. I'm just going to pull over and call in sick and avoid and maybe go home and maybe use behaviors, you know, like, and part of my higher purpose and higher power, my job is my, I guess, I don't know how to explain it, but my higher purpose is very connected to my job. Like these are the things I believe in. I believe, like, taking from my Christian faith background, like, I believe in grace. I believe in forgiving people for being human. I believe that every person has worth no matter what they've done or who they are. Every human being has a fundamental human, you know, worth. I believe that my higher purpose, like, I can connect to those values through both facts and emotions, that my emotions tell me something, my values tell me something, and the facts of the situation tell me something. If you guys have ever done dialectical behavior therapy, it's essentially wise mind. Like, for all you guys that have been through like a zillion treatment centers like I have, it's wise mind. It's a combination of that. So I have to connect to my higher purpose, like, on a regular basis every day, to make that decision to, like, go to work and be of service, to make a decision to, you know, make that outreach call rather than turn to a behavior for comfort, to make that decision to, you know, get outside of myself instead of stay at home and cry, or to make the decision to let myself cry, let myself feel the emotions when necessary. So when you really are connected and you find something that you truly trust, it really does help, like, get through all the daily drama, when you know that you're dedicating your life to something bigger than yourself. So let's see, what else did I want to, like, focus on for 1 second? Okay. So here's the next part. So, page 121, it's not like a full paragraph, but it talks about the strange mental blank spots. And, I'll just read this little part. Yet even at our worst, unable to depend on ourselves, struggling to trust those around us, caught up in any number of forms of acting out, we often found we were still able to understand what was fair and just, true and worthwhile, except when it came to ourselves. So here's where I really struggle, is I can really do a good job of my higher purpose being like, everyone has value, and I can, like, you know, work with people at work that have done some pretty not great things, and I can treat other people who treat me badly with respect, and I can pull upon that when it comes to other people. My biggest struggle, where my higher power is really, where the rubber hits the road, is when it comes to myself, and not beating myself up when I make mistakes, forgiving myself when I use a behavior, being gentle with myself in that way, because I can't fully, like, dedicate myself to my higher purpose if I'm not surrendering that in that area. That's, like, one of the gifts of recovery that I think EDA is slowly bringing to me. That's, like, the last remnant of my disorder clinging on to me. And I truly believe that the more I grow in this program, that I'll be able to turn that over as well.
Elise, maybe this is a good point to wrap up.
Yep, that sounds good. So I'm wrapping up. That's it. Thanks for listening.
Like, you don't need to mute because there may be some questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, let me stop the recording. Stop the recording. Do you want to stop the recording?